Roadshow, episode number 414. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me, and it is a massive, massive pay-per-view week, UFC 285 here in Las Vegas. And you may say, well, that's got to be the most important thing to talk about, isn't it, John Morgan? I'll say no. You know what's most important to talk about, Cole Coffee?
What's that?
It's cold. It's so cold in Las Vegas, bro. I have been here since 2008. I know you came just a little bit after that, maybe 2010.
2011.
2011?
Yep.
Do you ever remember it being this cold in March? It snowed this
morning.
Well,
definitely not in March. I feel like there's been colder times. Like, I don't even think it's that crazy cold.
Oh.
But, like, it looks it. It feels it because when you look around with the precipitation,
yes,
it just makes it feel colder. I've never seen the mountains, that whole sort of range over there that's to the left, which is like the Spring Mountain Range.
I think so.
Or something like that. The and then there's another range, forward. They're all snow covered.
I've never seen
them.
Not just the little tips up
at
the top.
Just the tip. Not just the tippy top one.
Not
of the very
just the
back
tip,
back.
You know. Yeah. Just the tip.
Normally the snow god just likes to put the tip up there. It's full on, full shaft of snow up these mountains. And I've never seen it like that.
Bro, it snowed this morning before we got to the UFC Apex for media day.
I didn't get any? No. It was raining here.
It was snow. And you're right. In the grand scheme of things, I mean, you and I have been fortunate to travel to some pretty remote places. I know you used to live up in Ohio. Of course, I lived in Ohio as well. It's not as cold as I've ever been in my life. It's in the 40s and 30s. But it's as cold as I've ever seen Las Vegas in March. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
Give me 115 tomorrow. Normally I like to ease into summer a little bit. You know, we kind of get that March. And then I always say, April or October, baby. April, it's like 75 degrees every day. It's beautiful. Go outside. That's a great time to play golf. Give me 115 tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, we might have it. I mean, granted, it's the beginning of March. So it might as well still be February. It might still be winter. You know, we're not quite in the spring thing. But it's funny because your wife went on social media and was complaining about it. But it's funny because not being from a place where it has a lot of, like, snow and slush and all that.
Right.
She was trying to come up with the words to describe it. I was like, because she's never seen it like that. She's like, what is this mix of wet stuff, snow, or something along those lines? And I was like, back home, well, we would either call that slush or we would call that blah, 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 blah. But I just thought it funny because out here, like, what is this shit? You know, normally the snow never sticks. It never accumulates enough to where you can ever get anything like a slush pattern where you're actually walking through it and you can still see the footprint all the way through. But yeah, it's definitely been cold and a little nasty. But the best part I took out, like I said, was just the mountains. I think
I was beautiful.
Sat at a light and looked over it, and I was like, this is beautiful.
It is pretty. You know, that's one thing that, you know, when I first moved to Las Vegas, I grew up in Dallas, right, the plains. You know, and then even when I moved to Oklahoma, I moved to Kentucky, I moved to Ohio, you know.
Flat,
right? And then when I first moved here, all I could see was the mountains because I'd never had it. And then after a while, they just blend into the background.
They blend into the traffic until you're just like, oh, you don't even see it.
But when they're covered with snow, like,
It's pretty.
So, all right. Well, listen. Let's do a cheesy transition. It's cold outside, but it's gonna be hot on Saturday night inside the T-Mobile Arena. Now it is UFC 285, and man, you know we get in these swings where we do like multiple fight cards in a row in Las Vegas, and you do kind of get into the routine, right? Because we go to the same building, we go to the Apex, we go.
Yep.
You know, it's the same place over and over. And as much as I love the fights, I always say is there's no place I'd rather be on Saturday night. It just gets kind of routine or whatever. But then pay-per-view week rolls around, right? And the media day is over on the other side, and you got, like, you know, 100 media in there instead of, like, 5. And you got John Jones coming back, who we haven't seen in 3 years. You've got the great Valentina Shevchenko. You've got the buzz around Bo Nickel. You've got – I mean, it just – pay-per-view weeks – I know we're just getting started into them, and we still got the press conference to go where we're going to get to see those face-offs. I can't wait for that. We still got the weigh-ins to go. We're going to get to see John Jones as a heavyweight for the first time to go. And then we got, you know, the fights as well, of course. But I got to say, man, I'm feeling pretty good after today's media day. I thought that was a fun one.
Yeah, it was good just seeing all the people. But, yeah, I mean, John didn't miss a beat when it comes to just, like, being able to sit down and answer questions and just command the media. Oh. I mean – it's not that I missed his voice, but he always just had such a smooth sort of, like, talking voice that once he got it, I was like, man, where has this thing been? You know, I can't believe it's been, you know, however, what, 3 years or whatever. But I you know, just seeing how calm, cool, and collected he did and how big he looked, I'm so excited for that fight. A lot of the other people out the day today were good. Like she said, you mentioned Bo Nickel. I thought he was another one that was very, you know, sort of had some really good answers, but, you know, was sort of reserved, but was, like, playing the line good. Cody
Garbrandt.
You know, that was sort of
Cody
Garbrandt. You could tell the emotion that was behind every word that he said.
We'll get into breaking down this card, but, just off the top, I'll say Cody Garbrandt. Honest, heart-wrenching. Yeah. If you didn't catch these things live, definitely check
it
out.
It was like the difference of like having a guy that the world was your oyster and everything was going your way and just being able to just like, bro, I could walk through this wall with my confidence, you know, and this was a guy that you could tell that had shit happen to him. He was broken down and he rebuilt himself back up mentally to a good spot to be ready to fight, and that's what you saw. You saw somebody that was just all the pretension, all the, you know, airs about him were gone, and it was just a guy that was honestly speaking, you know, his mind, and it was nice, it was refreshing. I've always liked Cody, you know, especially, you know, having the Ohio connection. I've always been one to pull from him, but also just seeing a guy up there that just, you know, you could tell that life had hit him hard recently, and just to see him like pulling himself back up, you know, it was cool. It was very, very cool, and it was great to see. You know, just the emotion in his face. And it wasn't like we've seen guys up there recently, you know, actually breaking down and stuff. This was as open and as, you know, emotional, but without like the tears, you know, but you could tell that this guy was bearing everything, you know. It was nice to see.
It's funny because I know you've always had that Ohio connection, so you've always pulled for him, right? But he's kind of admitted it. Like, I think there's been times along the years where he's been a little bit standoffish with the media or a little bit just like, I don't even want to be
sometimes
here right
at
now.
The prodding of his management as well.
True.
You know, like, I guarantee some of that was him, but I guarantee there were some points where, you know, Ali was like, you know, guys, I don't appreciate what some people are doing. He's like, just don't talk to people. Just don't talk, you know.
Yeah.
And then some of these guys were just like, okay, cool. I mean, they take everything he says, you know. So, yeah, I think there was definitely errors where he was like, well, fine. But at some points, I think sometimes some of these guys are just taking direction to kind of be a little bit short. So, but that's also me not wanting to put the blame on him like that as well half the time.
It's not Cody's fault.
It's obviously somebody else's fault. I mean, a good Ohio guy doesn't have anything wrong with him.
So funny. But he was up there today, and, you know, as you said, going through just everything that he's been through, you know, admitting, hey, man, it wasn't even really the physical side of it. It was the emotional side of it. You know, I went through a divorce. I had to sell my house and relocate to Las Vegas so that I could stay close.
Leave his diehard team. I mean, like, that dude would never – I mean – obviously, if there was one thing to pull him away, he admitted it was his kid.
Yeah.
Wanting to be able to have a life with his kid.
And
you
bro,
know?
I relate to that.
Because
you know
that team was everything. That team was his family. And you could tell that the move hurt. You know, And we said this tons and tons of time about there being great teams and great people that lead the teams here in town. And he went off to rattle some of the names like Eric Nixick, you know, Dewey Cooper, a lot of the guys that are here in town that made it the transition as good as it could be for a guy that literally – just felt like his life was uprooted and taken, you know, somewhere else. And then here he is chasing after his former glory, chasing after his family to stay with his family and keep that going, but also chasing a career that he wasn't ready to let go of, you know. And I'm sure some of the losses and other stuff are giving him questions, but then seeing his life sort of like go through all these sort of spirals that were just spiraling out of his control, you know, to take another ditch effort to come out here, you know. And I appreciated what he was saying about Vegas. You could definitely tell that, you know, while this wasn't his initial pick, that when some people asked him about like some of his places where he likes to go, dude, he rattled off without hesitation some spots.
Coffee shop, sushi restaurant, steakhouse.
You know, so he's embraced it, you know, and you know, and this could be in a couple years from now, he might say, you know, it was weird at first. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to think about moving out here, and he might love it. You know,
might be his turning point.
It took a couple years for me to really say like this was home. I always thought that this was going to be maybe 3-4 years. We'll just see what happens. Now I can't think of anywhere else where I'd rather
100%.
Live. You know, maybe somewhere along some water, somewhere nice, somewhere tropical. But besides that, I mean, like the ease and the access of things here, and now. Like what I was saying about the teams, he has access to great quality teams. I mean, I'll never take away the relationship that he had with Alpha Male. Those guys were like brothers to him, and I think they'll always be brothers. But those were also like the perfect size fighters for him.
Right.
He's going to get those same sort of fighters at Extreme, but I think he's going to get even more so.
Well, and you know what else might be unique too is because I was talking to Ode Osborne, and he was talking about how much Dewey Cooper has meant in his life.
Yeah.
And he was talking about working alongside Cody and how good Cody is working. But – you know, you think to that Team Alpha Male scenario, like they're all like brothers, right?
Yep.
But they all kind of admit, like, that there's not really a head coach. They just kind of, like, you know, they all rely on each other.
Some of the brothers became the coaches.
They did.
You know, they kind of stepped just to kind of step into it.
Like, now there's head coaches because, like, they're the – but as they came up together, there wasn't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it might help to just have that guy in, in the – oh, no, Dewey's
proper
my
structure.
Coach. He's he's the one setting this out for me. I need you to do this. You know, I think that's – you know, when somebody else is holding you accountable – now, Cody seems like the guy that holds himself accountable enough.
Yeah.
But still, there's something about answering to somebody else and, like, not wanting to let that person down and making sure you're doing what they're supposed to – maybe
and we just heard that, too, from Ferguson. Ferguson was one of the bigger ones recently that was like – who always was like, I'm directing my own thing, direct my own thing. But then when he got back to start taking from a coach recently, I feel like maybe even the last one, he was like, he was crediting how much better he felt because he did put himself back into that structure. I mean, I think when it comes to managing yourself, you know, I think it's great that fighters are, you know, possibly at times getting rid of the manager thing. But we've also seen good examples of the coach managers. You know, sometimes fighters can do a lot of things on their own, and I think it's good for them to have the skills to do it. But in certain things, yes, it's good to kind of help maybe self-direct some of your training, but at least have that ear, that shoulder that you can kind of lean on to make sure that you're going in the right place.
Right.
And if you're going to go the route where you're going to actually have a traditional head coach, you know, we see these guys make leaps and bounds because it's one thing where you think you know, but you forget the little things. It's so easy to get caught up in the little thing. You know how us fighters do, you know. I mean, it's so easy to get caught up in the one little thing
what,
you miss the
minutiae.
That's
what Oscar tells me all the time, you know what I mean?
They miss the minutiae, the small little bits and details, and that's the great thing about having a great coach. They see all the little things that you might overlook, and then they just shape you in the right direction. And out here in Vegas, working with those cats that he mentioned. I mean, there's no better place. I mean, it's perfect for him. And I'm looking for him to thrive. And even just sometimes out of the act of forcing yourself to get into an uncomfortable situation, go to somewhere
that
new.
Can be enough.
It's either going to sink you or you're going to rise to the top.
Yep.
You know, and I think this is that stage to see where he's going to be. And even if this fight maybe doesn't give him the result that he needs, but if it's a step in the right direction, I'm looking forward to him. I mean, this could be a reemergence of his career by coming out here.
Very, very passionate stuff, man. And, you know, there was something – it was weird. It was almost poetic to me. He was the last guy of the day. Some of the media had already bounced, you know what I mean? Some people had packed up and left. And you think
who are
about
those
it.
Jerks?
I know. Some people had, and it's just like, you know, top of the mountain, Cody Garbrandt. Now it's like, man, and bearing his soul in front of everybody. So, big one there. And I don't want to take away from Trevin Jones either, who, by the way, Trevin knows his back's up against the wall, but he was willing to jump in here on this opportunity and fight a former champion. So
it's a tough fight. It's a tough fight. Both sides. Both guys have a lot of power and a lot of possibilities. And I mean, as much as I'm pulling for Cody, this is not an easy fight by any means. It's not an easy fight.
Not any stretch. All right, let's talk about what everybody's here for. Of course, though, the main event: John Jones versus Ciryl Gane.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Mataj and Jalen Turner.
I remember that one too. That one too. I mean, listen, hey, this is
main card's
a stacked
good.
Main card.
The main card's good.
I could see, you know, maybe some casual fans might not know Mataj. They might not know Shavkat. You know what I mean? But
and if somebody hasn't paid attention, they might not even know who Bo Nickel is.
100%.
You know, 100%. They're going to be like, wow, who's this cat?
Yeah.
You know?
I'm excited for it. But, of course, I mean, the name atop the bill, John Jones versus Ciryl Gane. We got to see John Jones back. Again, I think there's still going to be some real intrigue in the face-offs at the press conference because – you know, we're just going to see the size difference. But, of course, they might be wearing suits. They might be wearing all that. I think the weigh-ins on Friday is where we're really going to get an opportunity to see what John Jones looks like. I mean, we've seen a little bit in the countdown episodes and that sort of thing. But I'm anxious to see what he looks like as a heavyweight. But I will say, and you talked about the ease at which he came in today. You know, John, to me, you're 100% right. And he's always had that nice, smooth tone. And he's always very calm and meticulous in the way he speaks. But throughout times in his career, I've always felt like John is really overthinking what he's saying and trying to say the right thing or trying to come off a certain way or build a certain type of reputation or you know, character or persona, if you will. But I could be wrong, but I do feel like he's grown up a little bit, and I do feel like he's being a little bit more direct and open. And I don't know, I feel like he's gone about this thing the right way. And man, he is seemingly brimming with confidence ahead of this matchup. You know, I would say he stopped short of talking trash about Ciryl Gane. Still not saying his name right. Still not going so far as to actually pronounce his name properly. I think he has moved on from Cyril to, I think now it's more Ciryl. But it is still Gane. But, you know, some of the things he said, you know, it's like he kind of didn't want to really talk trash, but did also say, hey, this dude got outworked by Francis Ngannou. Like, a guy in Francis Ngannou that you don't think of as the cardio machine, a guy that you don't think of as the dude that's going to outwork you and that's going to outgrind you, you know, he's a guy that's going to land the one big shot. And yet, over five rounds, Francis Ngannou's effort and work ethic, that was what got him the fight. And so, it's not talking trash, but I think it's a pretty serious criticism to lay out there, a fair one at that. Meanwhile, Ciryl Gane, I think, certainly not blown away by the moment by any stretch of the imagination, certainly not nervous ahead of this, it doesn't seem, certainly not as kind of overwhelmed as I think he was the first time fighting for the title. And he kind of admitted that, you know, that, man, all the cameras, all the added attention of the first heavyweight title fight, it was some pretty serious stuff. This time, I'm way more comfortable with it. I think mentally, I'm a lot more confident and comfortable this time around. And also, Ciryl would not minimize who he thought John Jones was going to be. You know, it's like, hey, no, I'm expecting vintage John Jones. I'm expecting that badass John Jones. But I'm expecting him, you know, to also be as strong as a heavyweight is. So I don't know.
When he was given numbers of his strength and like stuff he was lifting and stuff, and even just looking at him up there, you could even tell the difference. I mean, Ciryl is a ginormous dude, but seeing Ciryl sitting down obviously looked like a big dude. Seeing John up there looked huge. Massive. As well. Like, he is a big, strong dude, and for him to come in and say, and I agree with what he was saying. He's like, he's not going to be towards the top of the heavyweight range. You know, he thinks he's going to come in between like 245, 250, I think is what he said, or 240, 250, mm-hmm. or something like that. That's a solid range, man. Yep. And watching some of the clips he's put on his social media of actually just working out, he had and Joku, one of the guys from like the Browns and stuff like that, on like social media, but seeing his size and his speed moving mm-hmm. around, holy cow. Like, it's everything that we thought Jones would be, in still having the speed, but now having a fully fleshed out heavyweight frame in good shape. Holy cow. I mean, the heavyweight, oh man, I know we got to see how he's going to feel when he's taking these punches, but it's Jones, man. We know what Jones is going to bring, man. And seeing him up there and seeing how good he looked and seeing that frame, and if his mentality is as lock and stock as it's supposed to be. He did sort of definitely sidestep the question of what happened out here at the Hall of Fame. You know, didn't want to bring it up. I thought there was a possibility that he could have addressed it, because he still kind of went on immediately after that and was talking about, you know, thanking God and his mentality and, you know, finding religion or more with his faith or something a little bit along those lines. I was like, man, this is the perfect opportunity. You could have said something. Then I would know that his mind was fully kicked in. But maybe it was just a matter of, like, he was just like, hey, that was that long ago. I don't want to even bring it up. I'm just going to stay focused on this. But, man, he sounded sharp. He looked sharp. And as much as I like Ciryl, I just don't see him having an answer for Jones. And maybe that's just me leaning too far on what Jones has done in the past to immediately think that he's going to come in here and just smash these guys. Jones at a light heavyweight was dominant, and I think a lot of the guys, the light heavyweights that he were fighting, were decently matched in size-wise. John going up to the heavyweight, fighting guys that don't have the same physicality, the same endurance and mm-hmm. stuff that he's bringing, and then now to hear some of the numbers of the strength, I just really feel, man, if his cardio is as good as he makes it sound, I just don't see guys putting up a good fight for him.
Look, I feel the same
except
way.
Except for maybe one.
Well, what, Francis Ngannou with the big knockout power? Yeah, with the one-hitter quitter.
The equalizer. That will equalize everything else. But, I mean, when it comes down to technique, I mean, I think Ngannou's technique and his takedown defense has grown leaps and bounds.
Yes.
John has great takedown skills. I mean, like, he does quick with, like, sweeps and just weird, crazy, awkward things he can get that guys down. As much as I think Ngannou's improved, I still think Jones is going to have the advantage getting him down to the ground.
Yep.
But it's the power. That power's obviously an equalizer.
I agree.
You know?
I agree.
But, man.
But I'm with you in this matchup, and it's funny because I've been having some conversations with people over the last couple weeks online or in online chats and stuff, and there's a lot of people that are just adamant that Ciryl's the guy, that John is – John
Ciryl's got great power, but we've seen Ciryl lose to guys that, you know,
I just wonder – it just makes me wonder if – I mean, Because now I'm kind of wondering about the biases myself about, right? Like, well, dude, we've been watching the entire John Jones career. We've been seeing the entire domination.
Yeah.
But it has been 3 years. And this has been a new division.
Yeah.
But I just still think the wrestling advantage is going to be huge in
here. It's going to be huge. It's huge. I mean, that stuff doesn't go away. I mean, like, that dominance and that availability. Bo Nickel can work on nothing but striking for the next 3.5 years, and his wrestling's still going to be leaps and bounds across other people. If you have a great skill, that's going to work for you, you know, and it's going to be dominant. And John has a really dominant set of skills, but it's his that length, the way he's able. He uses his legs in some of these trips and sweeps like they're hands,
right?
You know, and I think that's the difference, that a lot of big heavyweights aren't going to have that ability. I think they get so top heavy where they either want to try to lock the arms down, they're going to try to pull you in, and if you're trying to grab John's shoulder and you're trying to pull him in close to try to like stop him from striking you, next thing you know, he's going to tip you off balance and he's going to sweep your leg and he's going to get you down to the ground.
Right?
He's just really, really tricky and quick with that, and then to have the ability, and part of that's from the wrestling, just having such a great understanding of balance. That's why the yoga people are so, or not yoga, judo people mm-hmm. are just so fantastic, because they could literally be off balance but still contort their body and make you off balance and then pull you off even though you initiated the whole thing in the first place. John's has a way of doing that sort of thing. So, man, I want this to be a competitive fight because I want to see John actually take the punches of a heavyweight that has good power. Cyril's super, super tough. I mean, he's got good cardio, but most heavyweights, it's not like boom, 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 throw. They hold that power, so they usually maintain it all the way through unless they're taking a lot of damage. So unless John's, you know, really peppering him, that power's going to always be there. I think John, for the most part, even though he's still a heavyweight, we're still going to see the same thing. He's going to work on the legs. He's always got those little kicks that are always trying to take the balance out and take the power away. He's going to work on Cyril's legs. He's going to try to take that power away. And if he can get it to where Cyril can't move and then John's just able to have his way, I mean, it could be a bad night. And that's what I'm envisioning is going to happen. John's going to try to – they're going to be both very respectful. He's going to maintain the distance. And then he's just going to work on the legs. He's going to work on that lead leg. And then if Cyril can't stand on his leg and he doesn't have the power to throw – then John has nothing to worry about because half that power is going to be gone because he can't lean on his legs.
Well, and it's funny too because, like, I think if you're Cyril Gane, you probably want to chop the skinny legs of John Jones, right? But
we've seen people try that.
But exactly. But that allows John to reach down and grab your leg and get into the takedowns. Now, if you're Cyril and you make sure that you never throw a naked leg kick, like you make sure that
set up everything.
Everything has to come with a combination ahead of it, you know. But I just have rarely seen people pull that off. It's like for whatever reason they just forget and they end up throwing a naked leg kick and he only needs one.
Yep.
He only needs one. He's going to grab you and get in on a single leg.
And
once
he gets you down, he's really, really tough to get off your back. He's tough to get him up. You know, I mean, it's
and
one
he does
thing.
That, damage from top.
I mean, it's one thing to be like, say, like a Derrick Lewis, which when he can push somebody up, it's just pure power when he's actually just pushing you off. John has a way of just locking you down. I mean, but Cyril's tough. I mean, Cyril might have the strength to push him off, but John's just got those legs and he just wraps around you, and it's just tough to get him off, you know? So, man, I don't know. Maybe we are biased, but we've seen time and time again guys at the super, super top level, they step away for X amount of time. And then they come back and they're still able to perform at a high level. This is a guy that's been able to sit back, watch the game change, and mentally focus on it, but then train, get his body to a point where he feels absolutely 100%, and he's strong as he's ever been, and he's been doing nothing but technique and training and strength training for the past like 3 years. Dude, I would hate to be the very first person that goes in there. I mean, but maybe that's the best thing because it's the first person that's actually going to feel it. Maybe he's not getting into his pure form. But I think at this point, he's been working on getting this proper form of what the version that we're going to see on Saturday. Mm-hmm. He's been working on that for years now. So what's going to show up on Saturday? I'm expecting a monster of a man that has every skill set and quickness of a light heavyweight, but in a heavyweight frame, because he's going to be smarter. He's still going to fight like a light heavyweight. He just happens to be at a heavyweight body size.
The fight IQ is just what keeps going through my head. Like how calm and calculated he is in there.
He's been there everywhere.
It's not like he's ever been the more it's like he's never relied on his athleticism or relied on his power. No, he's relied on his technique and his ability to read a fight. Yep. And I think that still stays at heavyweight. It's not like you go, well, that dude, I mean, he could knock out everybody with one punch at light heavyweight, but I don't know if that's going to be the same at heavyweight. He never knocked out anybody with one punch at light heavyweight. Yep. That's not what he did. He picked you apart. Yep. He out-wrestled you. And it looks like his frame is a legit heavyweight frame now. Yeah. So,
and was he the one that said, was talking about it, and maybe it was him talking about somebody, but he just knows how to win. Mm-hmm. When he's pushed up against the wall, when he's in the corner, when he's down and out, like when we saw against Gustafsson and stuff like that, he wins. Mm-hmm. He finds a way to win. And I can't remember if that was him that was talking about or if it was somebody else talking about it, but I remember that came up today and somebody was saying that particular phrase, and that's Jones. He's got a lot of IQ, but he finds a way to win.
Yep.
So even when you push him up against the wall and say if he starts getting hurt, Gon's going to have to if he does land a big overhand or big something that shocks him, he's going to have to go quick before John is able to get his head cleared, because he's going to find a way to get out. He's going to think his way out of it. He's going to immediately try to clinch up and do something, but you have to go quick. Because his brain is – that's, if anything else, and we've heard fighters say this over and over and over, the physicality is one part, but it might not even be the biggest part of what it is out there fighting. It's the mental side of thing. It's usually the mental side, the one that can push them in training to get to the point where they have the discipline to even get to this level, to stick with it, to get to, you know, this high level technique. But it's that that mental side that's able to just carry them through, where most of us would just be cowering in a corner, you know, like being able to deal with like the fear and the whole anxiety of being in a fight like this. He just finds ways to win, man. And I'm so looking forward just to see, because I mean, one, we'll sound like a complete jackass if he goes out there and gets starts, and we're like, you guys made it sound like it was the second coming, but the ingredients are there to have it be just an incredible show. I mean, I know a lot of people say that Gon's a guy, dude. On the flip side of it, and I feel like I don't want to be just putting John too high. I think John has the potential to go out there and make Ciro look worse than we'd ever seen before.
I think he can too. John said, I plan on going out there and making it look easy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
and he has the potential to do it.
It's funny because you say that. Like, we both sit here on the same side of the fence, and I think we both feel confident in our pick. However, I do want to make it clear. I always say, number one, when somebody goes to a new weight class, whether up or down, that creates question marks immediately, right? How does their body adjust? Number two, in this situation, it is the three-year layoff. That's huge too. Yeah. And then thirdly, it's rare that we see somebody make a weight class change. And, oh, by the way, it's a 60-pound weight class change. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, at heavyweight, we know anybody can finish a fight at heavyweight. So I would not sit here and say, hey, man, go make sure and cash out your 401k, mortgage your house and put it all on John Jones. Because I'm legitimately intrigued by this fight because of those variables. But when I look at it, I just, as you said, the recipe's there. I just feel like John Jones is the right play.
I just wonder how much would he usually weigh in light heavy? He had to be going in there 210, 215.
Oh, easy.
218, 220.
Yeah.
So figured if he's going in there and he thinks he's going to be 245 on fight night,
it's not
he's
that
only
big
added
of a difference.
20, 25 pounds.
It's not that big
muscle.
Of a difference. And you just don't have to have a weight cut.
And you don't have to have that hard weight cut. Dude, telling you.
He
made the right thing. It'd be a whole different story if he was like, I'm going to go down to middleweight.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, then we would then we'd be like, okay, now you're nuts. Nope. You know, but going up was the logical move, and he looks every bit better for it.
I agree.
He really does. I mean, how many fighters have we seen just come in there and you're just like, man, you're killing yourself to make it, you know? I think you think of like what he's doing on the heavyweight. Remember, we saw, you know, Rampage, you know, God rest his soul, you know, the torment that he would put on his body when we'd see him fight night. Mm. This is the complete opposite. This is a guy that literally looks better than I've ever seen him before on a fight week.
Are you talking about Rumble?
Yeah.
Rampage.
Oh, yeah, Rumble.
I was like, God rest his soul, because he did have some bad weight cuts, too. But I was like, oh, no, you mean
Rumble.
Actually God rest his soul.
Yeah, Rumble.
Yeah,
but
oh,
like
those were
Jones,
bad.
Yeah, Jones, I mean, literally, he looks as good as, you know, we haven't seen him on, you know, when he's, you know, on weigh-ins. You know, of course, he's like teasing himself because he doesn't have a six-pack. But just the way that his face looks and he's fully fleshed out, he looks as good as he's ever done on a fight week. So that looks good.
I'm anxious for that. All right, well, from one pound-for-pound grade to another, Valentina Shevchenko returns against Alexa Grasso. Where do you stand on this one? Because here's, I mean, we know the story here, right? It's not a hard one. I mean, we know these two fighters very well. Yeah. Obviously, Valentina Shevchenko, one of the best to ever do it in the female division. Alexa Grasso has been somebody that we've enjoyed watching on her rise up to the top. Yeah. Her boxing is as smooth as it gets in the yeah. women's division. She's had a couple of phenomenal performances leading into this. And then Valentina Shevchenko last time out against Tyler Santos didn't look as good as she normally does. Yeah. However, Shevchenko today said, oh, yeah, but it didn't look as great. But guess what? I'm still the champion, and that's what champions do.
Yep.
I'm fighting the best over and over, and maybe it wasn't my best night. Again, we had heard directly of some injuries that she was dealing with leading into that. I love Alexa Grasso as a fighter. I just believe I'm still in the mind, even after what I saw against Tyler Santos, I'm still not picking anybody against Valentina Shevchenko. And if it is going to be somebody, it might be Tyler Santos yep. in a rematch. It might be Erin Blanchfield coming up. You know, it's somebody I think the path to victory against Valentina Shevchenko does not involve me saying I'm going to outstrike her, because I just think that's a difficult assignment. Do you see Alexa shocking the world here, or are we in a position where this is just stylistically a really difficult matchup?
I think it's a difficult matchup. I think she can make it fun. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm hoping it's a fun, competitive fight, and I think she has every bit of toughness and the ability to do it. And you're right, Tyler Santos made Valentina look human, but mm-hmm. I mean, Tyler Santos she fought a perfect fight, you know. Maybe we see that fight run back a second time. Maybe it doesn't look as good, but that particular night, it looked fantastic, and it gave every bit the challenge for Valentina to get over. I mean, when you mentioned Blanchfield. Right now, if I put Blanchfield against Grasso in a fight, I don't know where I'm leaning on that one. Mm. And that says something about Blanchfield, and that says something about Grasso. I think Grasso is great striking, but Blanchfield has completely impressed me so much the last couple performances. I just don't think Alexa obviously, I went Val on this one as well.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a good fight, but I just don't know if she has the complete tool set to bring Valentina. I think Val has to have one of those bad nights,
mm-hmm.
Which is what happened against Santos. But she still was able to get it. She was able to get that win, you know. And I don't know. I just if I can't think in my head immediately that Alexa can get past Blanchfield, I definitely don't think that she. I'm not going to lean and put money down for her to try to beat Val. But I mean, anything's possible. When Pena fought Nunes, I was like, there's no effing way. I'm like, everybody was already writing the stories.
Right.
You know, Nunes was walking away, and Pena struck her up, man.
Yep.
So, I mean, the quality striking and a fighter not having a good night, we see what happens. So there's always a possibility. If Valentina has a bad night and Alexa has a hell of a great night striking and is able to do some damage, shit can win. Mm-hmm. She can win, you know? But I'm in the same boat as you. I mean, like, you have to, you know, tie me against a chair and torture me for me to not pick Val on that one. I mean, I have to be at my bare, you know, just ready to give up, you know, to switch that pick. You know, I just don't see enough. And I think Alexa Grasso is a great fighter. I mean, I love her personality. I think she's just talented. I think right now she's going to be that perennial top of the division sort of fighter. Right now with Valentina at the top, I just don't see her overcoming that. But I could be a complete jackass and wrong if she goes out there and sparks her, because she does have incredible striking. She has a great boxing.
It's great boxing.
But Val's just good everywhere.
It really is.
You got to get close to throw those hands, and that's where Val wants to kick your face off, you know. But –
yeah,
I mean, Alexa, she's got great head movement. You know, I think those kicks, just like when we said earlier, you know, you got to set those. She's going to have to set those up. If she tries to just throw those out, Alexa's going to be able to move and get out of the way. But Val sets everything up, man. Val, like we're buddies. I don't know how all of a sudden she just became Val.
I was wondering. I was like, I've never. I was like,
really,
I don't think I've ever heard
like
anybody call her Val. But
you know,
I'm like,
Val,
tight like that.
We're tight.
No, it's funny. I mean, Valentina, she is, or Val, if you will. She's
como está, Val? Can we talk Spanish? We could.
She is 34. I think she's turning 35. I believe later this month. But she's also a lifelong martial artist.
Yep.
Who doesn't damage her body.
I mean, that's still prime.
You know?
I mean, don't ask Don Lemon that,
right.
But I mean, that's still prime.
Wow.
Poor guy.
That's
crazy. He's had to throw him under the bus.
I love it.
I love it.
And she's not one of these people, you know, it's she doesn't party and stuff
no,
like that.
No,
she's
lifelong,
I mean?
Nonstop training. I doubt she maybe – does she even drink? Maybe like some champagne when she's just
She was at the World MMA Awards, and I didn't see her having a cocktail. Yeah. Maybe she did.
She's a lifelong martial artist. I mean, she's going to be physically fit for the rest of her life. Like, I'm not worried about her gassing out or doing anything. Like, her 48-year-old body is going to be better than most 30-year-old people. So, yeah, she's going to be okay.
I mean, look, I think you're right. I think Alexa can make it interesting. I think she can make it fun. But I still think to beat Valentina, you need to have superior grappling. I just don't know if that's the case here. And a little bit of luck as well. And a little bit of luck as well. All right, Shavkat Rakhmonov versus Jeff Neal. That's a lot of people high on Shavkat, of course. I mean, how can you not be at 16-0 with 16 finishes? I mean, that is an unreal track record against anybody you're talking about. But meanwhile, you've got Jeff Neal, who I think, number one, is coming in with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, feeling like he's not getting the respect that he deserves. He's coming off a couple of impressive performances. He's definitely shown, I think, to be getting better. I mean, his knockout of Vicente Luque last time out was impressive. All the confidence in the world, as I said, and I believe feels like he has a point to prove. I like Jeff Neal a lot. I like the fact that, this fight got rescheduled and he didn't shy away from it. In fact, as Shavkat's management team was chirping on social media through his account, Jeff chirped right back and was like, "Hey man, if you want to go, let's go. Like, I'm not, just cuz I got, hurt and had to step aside doesn't mean I'm afraid of taking you in any kind of a matchup." I like the confidence. He certainly has the ability to end fights with power. But I do think Shavkat does look like the real deal. It looks all the part of future title contender. So, I guess ultimately, did you lean Shavkat here as well?
I did. And I think Jeff Neal's a great fighter. Shavkat's just, man, his power can equalize a lot of things. I mean, if Shavkat doesn't think that he's got power and leaves his chin out there, Jeff can hurt him. But man, Shavkat's a big dude. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's got great ground skills. I mean, he's strong and he's a good striker on his own right. I did lean that way. But man, there's been times in the past where I've written off Jeff before a fight and he proves me wrong,
right?
And this could be one of those fights. I mean, he can only win in this fight. I mean, a lot of people are expecting him already to lose. So if he goes out and has a decent performance, people are going to be like, "Oh, man, that was great. You did better than we thought. We thought you were going to lose to this undefeated killer, But if he goes out there and shocks the world, then people are going to be like, "Wow," And he has the potential to do it. He's got power. I think his power, like some of the other guys, it's better early on for some of these guys. I don't think hold the power all the way through like heavyweights do, mm-hmm. and especially if they're taking damage or if they're being grinded out, and which could happen in this one. But he's got the power to equalize it. I just think, man, Shavkat's the real deal.
Yeah, and to your point,
he's the real deal.
I do too. And to your point, I was just checking the tail of the tape. 2-inch reach advantage for Shavkat, 1-inch leg reach advantage as well, according to UFC stats anyway. And then, of course, I don't think anybody would deny the wrestling advantage that lays there as well. So when you're the bigger man that has the reach advantage in all aspects, and you also have the wrestling game that you can turn to as well.
Yeah, because you want to get past that reach, but then, you're getting into his area where he wants you to go, But, again, if Shavkat gets tired and he lets that chin out there, Jeff has the power to end the night, it's a tough ask. It's a tough ask, but I think it's going to be a good fight. I mean, it's a great one leading into the two title fights, for sure.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. As well as Matosh Gamrot versus Jalen Turner, that's a fantastic fight as well. Matosh Gamrot is an absolute beast, coming off a loss, but, as he said, he kind of lost his focus in that one and paid the price for it. But he is an incredibly talented individual. Meanwhile, Jalen Turner, man, this dude just keeps getting better and better and better. And you want to talk about size advantages. You want to talk about reach advantages. According to the official stats here, a 6.5 reach advantage on the feet for Jalen, a 7-inch leg reach advantage for Jalen, which is just insane.
That's crazy.
But, of course, Matosh has the ability to neutralize all that with the fact that he can get in on takedowns, and I think he's certainly not going to want to try to set up and have a kickboxing match with Jalen Turner.
Yeah.
This one is intriguing to me too, and I usually tend to favor the superior grapplers, especially if they're not a grappler that has no striking whatsoever.
Yeah.
If it's somebody that's just a pure grappler, nothing else, then you got to be a little bit wary of what happens on the feet. But Matosh, to me, is a superior grappler with a well-rounded striking game as well. I kind of lean towards Matoush here, although I kind of hate to see the good story of Jalen Turner come to an end here because it's – man, yeah. This ride that he's been on has been pretty spectacular.
I can't remember who I leaned on this one. It's funny because if you ask Armin Sarukian, he would say that Matoush is on a two-fight losing streak.
Yes, he would.
But he was able to get through that fight. I mean, he took Beneil Dariush to a decision. You know, it was a unanimous decision. I thought Beneil looked awesome in that fight. But still, I mean, like – Matoush, I mean, he's a tough, tough kid, man. He's super, super strong. I think he's fighting at a good level. It's another guy that sort of find ways to win. But, yeah, I mean, he's got to be careful because Beneil pieced him up. Armin got some good strikes on him too. And Jalen, man, if he gets going and he starts doing some damage with that length, it could be a bad night for Matoush. I can't remember. I was trying – this is the computer I don't have Outlook on, so I can't see who I picked on it. But I think this is one of the ones
one.
I went
it's
back
intriguing.
For.
It's intriguing. I agree.
I picked Matoush the last couple of times he's fought, but I don't know if this was the one that I think I maybe switched for Turner. But I'm going to probably say I was Matoush as well, but I wouldn't be surprised if I did take Turner. But again, this is going to be another one. When we see them size up at the weigh-in, I think it's going to look ridiculous.
It's going to look ridiculous.
It's going to look ridiculous. And I think a lot of people are going to be like, oh, wow. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see the money line switch.
Especially if you're getting the way bigger dude as a dog.
Yep. You're going to see some money. You're going to see some money switch in that one. But again, yeah, I mean, that's a quality fight. I mean, and if people, you know, if somebody's just tuning into this card and they don't really know those names, that's every bit of fight that's going to be fun for them to watch. I think it's going to be great. I mean, they could have literally, the way that they're hyping up Bo Nickel and Pickett, I could have easily seen them pushing that fight a little bit higher because they want to really push towards Bo. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the two guys that are in this fight, Gamrot and Turner, I mean, like, they legit. I mean, I don't know if I hear oftentimes you say people say, oh, well, that fight could easily, you know, main card of fight night. I don't know if those two would have the name value, but in terms of the ranking, they do have the ranking to where you could put them on top of
a
fight night.
Well, in this era, they definitely could.
Yeah.
Could they headline a heavily anticipated fight night? Might be a better way to look at it, right? But you're right. No,
what country would we have to be in for that one?
these all have really legitimate impacts in the rankings, right? I mean, you're people that are, they're, you know, just hovering outside the top five, you know, in that top 10. So I agree. These are meaningful fights. And I think that's why, for hardcores especially, this main card is looking good. I mean, I think this was a well-constructed card in terms of those four fights right there because for casuals, all you need to know is Jon Jones is in there, right? That's all you need to know. Yep. It's the return of Jon Jones at heavyweight, and I don't care what else is on there. I can't miss that fight. Now, then you capitalize on Shevchenko as well, pound-for-pound great.
Yeah, another second title fight.
Right, so there you go. So at that point, I think the casual fan is in. But for the hardcore, these two other fights are great. Now, it all boils down to that opener. Bo Nickel versus Jamie Pickett. And I want to ask you about this because it came up a little bit today, and it's been a lot of discussion, right? We know Bo Nickel, all right? If you're listening to this, we don't need to lay out the pedigree. We don't need to lay out the wrestling history. We don't need to lay out what he's done.
Boy, when he started talking about Penn State being the winningest program, I was like, bro, maybe in wrestling. I immediately started going, I was like, let me pull up some Big Ten stats. I was like, I'm going to give you wrestling.
They're going to own
you
now.
They're an effing dynasty in wrestling.
They
right
are
now.
A dynasty.
They are unbelievable.
But, you know, he's got less than 2.5 minutes. So he's on the main card here. Now, I think the big thing is a lot of people look down to Derek Brunson and Dricus du Plessis. You got number 5 versus number 10 on the ESPN prelims. Now, Derek Brunson, I think correctly, was just like, dude, I don't care. I don't make any more money either way. Dricus seemed a little bit salty about it, right, where he's like, yeah, I don't understand why I'm not there. I would contend and remind people that a lot of times the prelims on ESPN do get viewed by more people than the actual pay-per-view does, so I think that's something to take some solace in. But I get it. Dricus is on the way up. He's had some amazing performances, and he feels that maybe he's getting a little bit slighted here by not being on the main card. But
you're right. It's legit ESPN, too. It's not even ESPN Plus. It's ESPN, so, like, if you have a cable program or whatever cable account like
of any kind,
you're gonna see it. So I mean, you're right.
The bars that aren't, you know, if you happen to be out on Saturday night, and the bars that aren't buying the pay per view,
there's
they
four
will
fights
have
guaranteed that are gonna be able to be seen everywhere, and this is one of those.
So I don't think it's such a slight, but here's the argument that I think, you know. So the question I've seen a lot of people
asking
is,
you think it should have been the featured?
Just
going back to the Dricus. You think he would have been happier if it was the featured prelim and not the second from the
Maybe. But I think stylistically, I think Garbrandt and Trevin Jones.
And
you know,
former
looking,
champ, dude, even though Drickus was in another.
Right, but he was – Garbrandt's a star. Garbrandt's still a star at this point. And you just know Garbrandt and Jones are going to go in there and throw down. Like, I know Jones is like, I think Cody's going to wrestle. I'm like, is he?
No,
is
somebody's going to go to sleep. Somebody's going to sleep.
You're looking for that big finish. All right, so here's my question, though. Is the and I'll just go ahead and preface it by saying what I had to say because, look, the question is, does Bo Nickel deserve to be on the pay-per-view? And here's the thing I think you got to realize is, does he deserve to be? I guess if you're saying by his accomplishments, absolutely not.
Yeah.
No business whatsoever.
Within MMA.
MMA. Absolutely. No business whatsoever. But think about this. What do you think ESPN wanted?
Yeah.
Do you think ESPN wanted Bo Nickel, this dude that everybody either believes is the next coming and they might as well anoint him champion now, or believes is an overhyped, you know, product, a hype train that isn't going to accomplish anything and that is, you know, the next, you know, Sage Northcutt and Paige VanZant getting way too much attention before they deserve it. I'm not saying – I didn't mean to say that they never became anything. I'm saying that, you know, that got that push
that
maybe people didn't say that they felt they deserved, right? The reason that he is – Bo Nickel is on the main card is because people want to put that behind a paywall to see that if you care enough about seeing if Bo Nickel's the real deal or not, you're going to have to put your money down. And, oh, by the way, you'll also get John Jones. You'll get Valentina Shevchenko. You'll get these other matchups.
Yep.
So I guess if, you know, if the question is, does he deserve to be there? Now, again, you point out correctly, according to his UFC accomplishments or MMA accomplishments only, he only has 2.5 minutes of MMA experience.
Yeah.
So, no.
Which says something right there as
he
well.
He absolutely does not, right? Yeah. I mean, did CM Punk deserve to be on a UFC pay-per-view?
Right.
Of course he didn't.
Right.
Did, you know, but did it make all the sense in the world for him to be on a pay-per-view?
100%.
Of course it did. And I think we're in the same situation with Bo Nickel here. Obviously, Bo Nickel is, you know, coming from an entirely different background than CM Punk, but that's the thing is, even ESPN, there's no way that ESPN was going to the UFC and going, hey, about this card lineup here, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, who's this Nickel guy and why is he on our pay-per-view? You know, they're going, hey, business partner, let's make sure if anybody wants to see this Bo Nickel thing, they got to pay $75 to do it.
Well, remember when we saw him at even the Contender Series, he had a documentary crew following him around. Like, they already realized that there is something with this kid. And as many people, that very first, like, Contender fight, so he went out there and just starched a dude in, like, a matter of, like, moments.
Right.
If somebody was still like, I'm just not quite sure about this guy, he hasn't really been tested, and you bring up the 2.5 minutes, if you haven't seen enough of what the potential of this guy is at 2.5 minutes, and then look at the accolades of what this guy did, like 3-time national champion, 3-time Big Ten conference champion, the guy has, I mean, he is an Olympic-level wrestler that didn't go to the Olympics, but he has every bit of the respect of the Olympic wrestlers and the guy that do that, but he also has hands. He's got good striking, but we just haven't really even seen it. But the guy, he says everything.
135-5 in college. 135-5 in college, including 2 straight undefeated seasons to close out.
It's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. When people were doubting, when people looked at Cejudo and were like, oh, okay, yes, we get it. He was an Olympic wrestler. We get it. He's proud to say that he was an Olympic wrestler. But what's it going to look like when he gets in there? And he went in there and beat the pound for pound at the time. The guy there was like, nobody's going to beat on Johnson. You know, he's going to do this other stuff. There's something about these wrestlers that get to this certain level that you just see something and you know it. And Bo has every bit that. I mean, and when you hear him up there talking, he's already got, you know, and I think a lot of this is credit to his time at Penn State because I guarantee Penn State put him through the media gamut.
Media training.
Like, nonstop, you know, talking. He says everything right up there. He repeats the question back. I mean, he's picture perfect in what you want an athlete. If you say, I'm going to put you up in front of media, are you going to be okay?
Yeah.
He's going to be okay.
By the way, but I mean, what about the first time he has to fight in front of 17,000 people? I mean, isn't he going to get nervous? Oh, no, that's right. No, I was at Madison Square Garden, sold out as a teenager.
I guarantee Penn State is a huge, like, program. Like, I guarantee their arena holds more than 18. It's probably 20-some thousand.
Absolutely. And they, so, like, and it the gets
guys,
packed.
And the guys, so he's, the guy's he's, used to it.
He's done it.
Yeah,
it's
unbelievable.
And I've seen people that, and I get it, man. I think sometimes people just, when people are identified as the next big thing, a lot of people just want to hate on him. Just
they want
because.
To hate on it, yeah.
And I heard a lot of people say, yeah, look, he only went to MMA because he failed out in the Olympic trials. He failed out in the Olympic trials to the dude that went and won the gold medal.
That's ridiculous.
So, I mean, if you were a allowed to send more than one person to the Olympics, he may have gotten a silver medal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that's not the way it works. And so that's why when you realize, well, I'm going to move on. And plus, he was just a big MMA fan. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go try that. So
it's funny because there's been so many high-level wrestlers that we've always – that people have identified like, man, if they only made that move, man, they would be something. This is one of the guys that did that, and he made the switch. You know, like we always talk about like Jordan Burroughs and some of the other cats. Man, they would be so dominant. This guy decided, hey, I like punching people in the face. I liked the challenge, and he just happens to be good at it. So, yeah, you can't look at the 3-0 or whatever record and be like, man, I'm just not quite sure. You know, you can be sure about this kid. I mean, it's going to be fantastic. But I love what Pickett was saying. You know, he likes the idea of being this guy. Like, okay, yeah, you want to bring me in here to be the guy to lose. I'll be the guy to test him. You know, and he fully embraces it. And it's not an easy test by any means.
Pickett's got the right mindset if he can maintain that mindset. And I know it might be tough.
Once you start getting grinded out there, and you can't do anything.
And I don't even mean that. I just mean, like, all the way – and definitely that. But I mean all the way to, like – fight night, like you got to tune out all the noise. Like you can't listen to anything. I know Donovan Beard. You know, obviously I knew Donovan Beard from CFFC, and he's a tough dude. And he was like going. He's like, I don't care who Bo Nickel is. Like, I don't really know. But he allowed himself to start listening to the hype as he got there. And he's like, he admitted like at the moment afterwards, he was like, damn. Like right when it came time to turn it on, it kind of got to me. Like, oh my God, I'm here. I'm. But luckily, at least Pickett is. Been here before. It's not like, you know what I mean?
It's so
it's not that added debut or, you know, fear or whatever. So it's still going to be a tough test. But I'll be honest, man. I'm all in on the Bo Nickel bandwagon. Am I saying guaranteed future champion, you know, put him right now? Like, for instance, today, right? Bo Nickel says, man, I like to visualize things. You know, somebody asked him about Hamzat, right? And he's like, hey, man, I think it'd be amazing. Me and Hamzat, Raider Stadium, you know, sold out, could be one of the biggest fights in the sport. And, you know, I'm sure people are going to pick out that headline and be like, this jackass hasn't even fought in the UFC yet. Like, what's he talking about? But, dude, you got to respect somebody. He's like, dude, when I went to college, I said I'm going to be an undefeated 4-time national champion. And you know what he did? He was a 3-time national champion and went 135-5. So he didn't quite reach there, but he got pretty damn close. So I think sometimes when people have their sights set so high, it's like that old saying, right? Like, if your dreams don't scare you, they're not high enough or whatever, you know? I agree with that. Like, you need to shoot for the stars, whatever. Like, I want to be that great. And I know there's going to be people that hear him say that and hate on him for it. I'm not that guy, man. I
like the idea of the matchup. I was a little surprised when he was like, oh, put in a stadium or whatever. I was like, well, maybe dial it back because you'd have to have the proper
supporting. I think he means
supporting.
Down the road. I think he means let them both win some fights. Yeah. let them work their way.
Because you have to have a nice little supporting cast to carry that sort of thing. Like, right now, you're like, that fight sounds absolutely fantastic, I'm like, would I pay money for it?
No, it's not a stadium fight now. But I think that's what he's saying. It's like, let's not burn that matchup right away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I agree with that.
Why don't you let us win a couple fights where all of a sudden you're like, they've been chirping at each other. Now, not the boxing model where you wait like 5 years to get there. You know what I mean? But like, let us win a couple fights and it becomes inevitable. These are the two trains on the track that must collide.
Yeah.
Ah!
At least a year. Give it a good solid year.
At least.
Three or four fights.
At least.
Yeah, because you start winning, and he wins 3 or 4 fights in dominating fashion. People are gonna be chirping for him to get something
you
big.
You need to get like both these dudes in the top five. Maybe one of them's a champion. Maybe you know, I mean, one of them would probably have to be a champion, and then that would be the contender that just made sense. So
yeah, because you figure, you know, if he has dominant wins, I mean, granted, at 2 wins or so, maybe it takes 3 wins to break into the top 10, and then maybe another couple to get that contender fight and something like that. So yeah, maybe it would take about 5 fights, but. He has the skill. I mean, he has the gift of gab, and he's got people behind him. We've seen people behind guys moving mountains for these fighters. You come in with a force of people behind you, Dana and the matchmakers will make shit happen. And then if you can actually make it work, it's impressive. It's impressive. But yeah, man, it's gonna be a good main card. I think the whole card's actually pretty decent. I know we say it a lot of times, everybody likes to shit on some stuff, but I mean, look at Ian Garry down there, you know, finishing off as the featured fight press prelims. Like, that's a good fight.
Bro, there's not a single fight on here where I'm looking at it going,
Yeah, I mean, the first fight starting is not bad. I mean, like, but it's like, it's pretty good all the way about. I mean, like, second fight's good. What do you think? Well, I know we're starting to get near past that hour, but that Jessica Penne and Ricci.
So you know, listen.
If I had to pick a fight where I was like the probably the least like.
Well, it's that. See, fight. Here's the thing: is this is a very very tough fight for Jessica Penne.
Tough.
But remember, I worked alongside of her.
This is gonna be rough for you because you want to pull for it. But
if I didn't have a dog in the race, you know what I mean? I'd be like, yeah, that's one. That looks like I think I could. But. Jessica's a great grappler. She's a great grappler. She's in good shape. She's healed up.
Yeah.
And I'm biased as hell because I worked with her at CFFC. So I'm hoping she can pull off the upset there. She's a sizable underdog.
She needs it. I mean, I think I don't know. I mean, I know she before that last loss, she had a bunch of canceled bouts, but she had two wins over Carolyn Kovacevic, which is huge. Lupita, not as big as the KK win, but with the injuries and other stuff. I don't know. I hate trying to like send people off. If she doesn't have a really good showing in this, I have a feeling this might be the last time we see her in the UFC.
It's possible. And I hate to hear that as well. I mean, I think she's already kind of looking at what comes beyond the fighting career as well. I mean, obviously, she's still in phenomenal shape at 40 years old. But I mean, how long do you continue to fight at 40 years old? And as you said, she's had some setbacks. I think for a fight that you're trying to pull an upset against the Tabitha Ricci, I think she at least has the right style to do it. Like if Jessica was a vaunted striker, you know, and with no grappling game, I might say, ooh, this is tough.
Yeah.
But she does. So it's a hard one, but I just know that I will be cheering for her.
On
the inside, of course, not outwardly. I will maintain my professional demeanor as a journalist, but I will certainly
quietly clapping on the inside.
I will be cheering for her opponent as well on the inside.
There you
go. That both everybody just has a great night, walks away safely, and can go back home to their family. But no, I'm looking forward to it. UFC 285. I guess. I know we're wrapping up. I did want to say a quick shout out to Darren Till. There will be no Darren Till bad talk around these parts. Obviously, no longer with the UFC. It sounds like it was of at least his own choice, which I'll be honest with you.
For now, maybe.
Which I don't think is a bad decision, to be honest with you. Step outside a little bit, whether it's because you need to be out of the USADA program for a little while to handle some business, or whether it's because you just want to go take some, you know, lower level fights because you want to get that confidence back and work on some things all the way around. Look, Darren Till's a star that makes a lot of money. He was never going to get any easy matchups in that division. I know he wants to get that confidence back. And like I said, maybe he's dealing with some lingering injuries that some time away from USADA might assist him with. But I will say, I think I speak for all of us, the entire staff of the MMA Roadshow.
Isn't that right, guys?
There will be no Darren Till slander around these parts.
No, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad when I was hearing that everybody was sort of saying that was on his, like it was his account. I hope that's true and not him just putting a nice light on it. Because I mean, obviously we want the best things for Darren. I mean, he can do no wrong in my book. But I'm glad that if it is on his thing, I'm hoping good things off to the side, whatever sort of works out. And if he can maybe make that return
at
some point.
He's still young enough, he can make it.
He's still young enough, and obviously the UFC is smart enough to know that people love the dude, you know, people love that kid. So, I mean, but that's tough, man. Doing some, you know, I hate to see him just go and throw his face in a bunch of random fights, you know, elsewhere just to get, you know, small paychecks or something.
Gotta be smart.
I want him to be smart, you know, and maybe, you know, see what other little things are out there and stuff. But he's a good kid, man. So, it still hurt. It still hurt seeing that. I saw the roster, the Fighter Watch roster removed, whatever, and I was like, fuck.
I know.
It hurt a little bit.
I think we'll see him again.
I hope so.
Brandon Moreno got cut from the UFC. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And this isn't even a cut. This is just a move away to take care of some things, and we'll see Darren Till back again real soon. Hopefully we'll see you all at the and a half episode over at patreon.com/MMA Roadshow. If you like what you listen to from us for as little as $3 a month, you can help support the show. Certainly appreciate that. Put out an extra episode this week on all platforms, just a little pilot episode of my interviews. I like cutting out little social clips, but I also like interviews in whole. And I listen to a lot more audio than I watch video. So gave that a run. So if you have any feedback on what you thought the interview show was like, certainly want to appreciate that. But hope everybody is gearing up for this incredible pay-per-view, UFC 285. We'll be looking forward to it. We'll be there on Fight Night. We'll have the and a half episode afterwards. Hopefully it warms up by then.
It'll be warm.
I better get warm. It'll be hot inside T-Mobile Arena.
Well, it was certainly hot enough inside the Apex today. I'd take my sweatshirt off. It got hot in there.
first world problems. All right, I'm off to my kids' soccer practice.
I think they're overcompensating because it was so cold outside. I was like, why is it so hot in here?
Bro, the heater needed to be on. It was freezing outside. Snow is falling in Las Vegas on March 1st. What is wrong with you, weather? Fix everything. And thanks for listening. We'll be right back.